The Here podcast is all about reclaiming your power and reconnecting with your mind and body. By releasing our stories and the power they have had over our lives and creating a compassionate and supportive community, we can bring love, understanding, awareness, and healing to ourselves and to all who need it most. Join me in saying, enough is enough. I own my power. I am ready for the next chapter of my life, and it will be the most amazing one yet. Hello, hello, and welcome back to Here Podcast. Thank you so much for joining me today. I'm really excited about today's guest. I have Stephanie Jarmuth, and she is a certified hypnotist, and she owns her own practice named Reroute Hypnosis and Wellbeing. And she is here today because she really wants to change the way people view hypnosis and PTSD. So welcome, welcome, Stephanie, to the show.
Hi, thank you so much for having me.
I'm very excited to have you. When we spoke a couple weeks back, I know that I was really interested in hypnosis, especially as a way to help heal from my past trauma. But I also had these ideas, these incorrect ideas. So I'm really excited to have you about what hypnosis is. You know, I think of the, when I clap my hands, you're going to, you know, bawk like a chicken or, you know, and which was, it's funny, but it was also a little scary, like, because then comes into play, well, I don't want someone to have control over my actions based on what they say to me. So after our conversation, I just loved the way you explained it and you just brought a new light to it. So I'm very happy to have you on the show. And before we dive in to all of this fantastic information that you're going to share with us, I would love to know what got you interested in hypnosis and starting your own practice.
So I was having a horrible insomnia problem. And so it was going on for about 2 years, and it wasn't something I had always had. It was something that I developed. And so it was kind of even more confusing to me because I didn't know where it came from or why I was having it. And there's multiple kinds of insomnias. My type of insomnia was I could not stay asleep. So I would wake up like 5 to 6 times every night, and it wouldn't be just like open your eyes, go back to sleep. I would be up for about 20 to 30 minutes minimum.
Oh my gosh.
And you can imagine how that could just take a toll on your life. You know, your energy levels would absolutely fluctuate, and my optimism for life just kind of started diminishing because I would be so tired and stressed and overwhelmed. And then I would also have the part of me that was frustrated of not having control over myself. Like, why can't I just make myself go to sleep?
Yeah.
And I knew I didn't want to use any pills or anything because I didn't want to be reliant on a medication. And so I was trying everything natural, everything under the sun, from aromatherapy, all the things. And I really don't remember how I came across hypnosis. It had to have been some sort of Google search or something. And so I was like, well, this can't hurt. So I went and I tried. And that night I was sleeping like a baby, and it just absolutely fascinated me because, yeah, I had those misconceptions as to what hypnosis was as well. And so when I got there, of course, I was surprised that it wasn't anything like I thought. And then the second surprise to me was that all I did was lie back, relax, allow this man, the hypnotist that I went to see, to speak to me. And then I slept like a baby. I was fascinated. I was intrigued. I was confused. I was all the things. And so I just had to know more. And so I didn't even really plan to become a hypnotist. I just wanted to know more. And so I just dove into everything I could find about it. And then that led me to getting certified, which led me to wanting to be able to create the types of transformations that I was seeing happen, because mine wasn't necessarily like a mindset or a limiting belief or a post-traumatic stress disorder transformation. It was just insomnia. But I was seeing through my certification, because in order to pass your certification, you have to prove that you know what you're doing. And so I would have people come and I would practice with them. And I was seeing the results. I was seeing people's lives transform and from PTSD to biting nails to overeating, you know, all different types of things were being helped with this one tool. And it was just so fascinating to me. And so I knew I just had to make something out of it. And so I opened up my own business.
That is so cool. How surprising that you develop this very, oh my gosh, I just can't even imagine. I mean, I wake up at night because my husband snores. He'd probably hate that I'm sharing this, but he does. And so I wake up a lot and I know when I, let's say I travel, so I'm sleeping alone and I get that mm-hmm. deep uninterrupted sleep. I wake up the next morning, I feel like $1 million, like I could take right. on the world. So mm-hmm. I can only imagine night after night not being able to sleep and what that did. And now, though, because of that, you were opened up to this new idea, and now that's your life, is helping people through hypnosis. That's very cool.
Right. It's almost as if my insomnia was like a blessing to me.
Yeah.
It's not how I would have thought about it while it was happening. But in retrospect now, I'm not sure I would have gone along this path had it not happened.
Yeah, that's very interesting and cool. Well, wonderful. Thank you so much for sharing that with us. And I know you really wanted to, and I would love this, share with us about PTSD. And there's something else. I never even heard of this, but CPTSD. I starting to do this and the podcast and talking to people who are trauma survivors and abuse survivors. A lot of them were talking about CPTSD, which would be complex, right? Post-traumatic stress disorder. And so I would love for you to break down PTSD for us and just share a little bit more about that for us so that we can understand and probably understand a little bit more about ourselves. And when I say we, you know, people that, mm-hmm. you know, have experienced trauma and a lot of probably right. my audience.
Yeah. So goodness, there's so much to say about all that. So I'll kind of start with just breaking down PTSD. So what do all those letters stand for? So post-traumatic stress disorder. So if we look at it one by one, post would be after. Traumatic, meaning after the event, the traumatic event. So post-traumatic equaling post the event, after the event, stress disorder. So it causes a stress, which is then a disorder because it creates disorder within your life. So disruption within your mind, your body, or your reality. And so when you think of it like that, and then you also take away the misconception that only veterans have PTSD.
I was going to say that you think of it with veterans. Okay.
Mm-hmm. So when you take away that misconception and when you break down the PTSD, you realize that to some extent, we all have PTSDs. We all have an event in our life that traumatized us, perhaps not as severe as a veteran or not severe as like a sexual assault victim. But perhaps you got lost in the store as a child and that was traumatic to you because you thought either you were abandoned or you thought you got lost and you did something wrong and that stuck with you. And so everybody has had some sort of traumatic event in their life and perhaps they are even unconscious of it at the moment, but that traumatic event may have had an effect afterwards. So if you, for example, let's go back to the small one. If you were a child who got lost in a store, you may have felt abandoned. And so that emotion kind of stuck with you, right? Mm-hmm. And so now when perhaps you took a wrong turn or you took a wrong direction or you got lost on the road or you can't find your friend in like a really large event, right? Those emotions might start coming up and you might not understand. I just took a wrong turn. Why am I feeling anxious right now? Like I know I could just get right back on the street. Why am I feeling anxious? Well, it's because your mind, your subconscious may have linked the not knowing where I am, feeling abandoned with this type of event of getting lost or being separated from someone, and it causes this disruption within your mind, your body, or your reality, right? So that right. disorder, it causes that disorder, which is stressful, and it's all because of that traumatic event, but it's happening either a week or years after the traumatic event. So post-traumatic stress disorder. So I like to break that down. And I also like to definitely clear up that misconception that it is only something that veterans have.
Wow. That is, I'm so happy you did that, because when you, exactly, when you hear PTSD, you think of veterans. And it really wasn't until I started doing this and hearing people talking about having PTSD or CPTSD that I thought, oh, that is more far reaching than just a diagnosis for veterans. So thank you so much for doing that. That is so interesting. Mm-hmm. If you can share with us different ways healing or addressing PTSD, and especially with hypnosis, I'm so curious how hypnosis helps people to heal from PTSD and past traumas. Because that's something else I'm realizing. You're absolutely right. I have a lot of guests that share that trauma. I'm realizing everyone has trauma. Everyone, small traumas, bigger traumas, all different types of trauma, and they affect our lives and the way we respond to things. So I'm really curious how, you know, hypnosis can help.
Yeah, absolutely. Let's get into it. That's what I love talking about. And so I just want to define one more word even a little
further.
Yes, so the word trauma, I mean, the actual definition of it, if you were to look it up right now, it's a deeply distressing or disturbing experience. And so, again, trauma isn't just for people who have gone to war and seen battle and seen those types of horrific things. Traumas are just anything that was deeply distressing or disturbing to you when it had happened. And perhaps it left such an imprint in your subconscious. And me talking about the subconscious is where I'll go ahead and dive into hypnosis. But that traumatic event left such an imprint on your subconscious that your subconscious held it as a truth about the world, and therefore can get triggered.
I'm glad you shared that, because if you think about it, because you had mentioned when it happened. So as a child, the way we view the world, something as an adult that we might see, that really isn't that traumatic. For a child, it would be.
Right.
Okay. Go ahead. Sorry, I didn't mean to interrupt.
No, totally fine. Okay, so I'll first go ahead and list all the things that the subconscious is responsible for. And it's kind of a buzzword now. A lot of people are becoming more conscious of what the subconscious is. And so I'll go ahead and briefly describe it. So the subconscious is the part of your mind that hosts your memories, your emotions, your habits, which, again, I want to break down one more word here. Habit is not just action. So it's not just going to the gym. It's not just smoking or something. Habits are also thought patterns.
Okay.
So a mindset can be a habit. Someone that thinks pessimistically most often, that's just, they have a habit of thinking that way, right? And so habits are not just actions. They are also thought patterns and emotional patterns. And so your subconscious is responsible for hosting and storing all of your memories, your emotions, your habits, your belief systems. And it is also responsible for maintaining proper bodily function. And what I mean by that is making sure your heart beats at a certain rate, making sure that you keep breathing, making sure your blood flow goes where it needs to go, right? Making sure that your digestive system is all in track and going and digesting the food, right? It is responsible for hosting all of those things. And I only listed five, but if you take each of those five things down, and you break them down, it's responsible for a lot of things. And your subconscious is the majority of your mind. It is predominant, about 90%, versus conscious. You are only conscious about 10% of the time. Oh. And so it really makes sense though, because if you think about how habitual we are as a human, you know, as a person, it would make sense that that part of your mind is much more predominant. And given that all of these things are happening in your body without you even needing to think about it, like you don't have to think about, oh, I'm going to have my heart beat this many times this minute, you know?
Oh God, that gives me anxiety to think about.
Right. And just knowing that your subconscious is responsible for a whole lot. And so I like to refer to it as the brain's hard drive, hosting the memories, the emotions, the habits, the lessons, the thought patterns, the behavioral patterns, the belief systems. And again, on top of that, maintaining the heart rate, the blood flow, the healing, etc. And this is important to know because PTSD has both emotional and mental and physical symptoms. And what is responsible for the emotions, the thoughts, and the physical body? The subconscious. And so because the same part of the mind has responsibility for maintaining the bodily functions and hosting memories and emotions, when you work with your subconscious, which is what hypnosis is, four. When you work with your subconscious to relieve or resolve PTSD, you are working at the source of where all of these things are. And so knowing this will help when it comes to knowing that or understanding how using hypnosis can relieve or remove your PTSD symptoms. And again, let's go back to a simple example. So a young girl gets bit by a dog pretty badly, right? And develops a PTSD around dogs. And in the end, she's okay, of course, but her subconscious has now stored the memory and learned from the memory to associate dogs with being attacked. Okay. And so that every time after that dog attack, so post the traumatic event, post-traumatic, every time after that event that she sees a dog, her brain does a number of things, which will, of course, vary from person to person, but let's just stick with this young girl in this example. So first, when she sees a dog post this event, her brain automatically remembers the dog attack that she was in. And then second, it sends stress and anxiety and fear chemicals and hormones throughout the body, aka it turns on the sympathetic nervous system, which rushes blood to the muscles so that she can flee, right? It halts the operation of digestion and some other bodily systems to conserve energy for fleeing or fighting or freezing, right? Mm-hmm. And then it puts her in a hyper ultra alert state in which logic has no place and where she is operating purely on survival instinct. And so first she remembers the dog attack. Second, all of these things happen all at once. It doesn't take that long to happen, but your body that event is triggered, that thought is triggered, that memory is triggered. And then her body responds that way by either fighting, fleeing, or freezing. And this isn't ideal for two reasons. Because if the logic is turned off in the mind, there's no reasoning with her, right? And so someone in that state, in the stress state, the disorder, someone in that state, you can tell them, or let's go back to this example, you can tell that girl, the dog is all the way over there. It is not the same dog that bit you. That dog is the size of your hand, and it cannot hurt you. But that none of that matters because she's in a hyper alert state in which her body is focused on surviving. And so none of the logic is going to matter. You can try to talk her out of it. It doesn't matter. She is in a disordered state. She is in a stressful state because of that memory being stored in her subconscious and her subconscious then associating dogs with being attacked. And if you want to expand on this example and go to veterans, some veterans get triggered by loud booms, right? Because mm-hmm. their subconscious has associated loud booms with bombs and death. Oh, yeah. And so when they hear a boom, their body does the same thing. It does all of these same things. It rushes blood to the muscles so that they could flee or freeze or fight. And it puts them in that hyper alert state in which logic is turned off. They're purely operating on survival instinct. And secondly, when operating in a survival instinct mode, it is like you have blinders on. Again, there's no logic there. You can't reason. There's no analytical skills. You can't just sit there and be like, oh, you know, that dog is like a little chihuahua and the dog that bit me was like a Rottweiler. You know, you can't, there's not that. And so you kind of have this tunnel vision that you cannot see outside of. And then again, this after this is where it kind of differs from person to person. So that girl, again, she could fight, she can run, or she can freeze. Or some other people experience PTSD in different ways where they have a panic attack, right? But again, all of these typical PTSD symptoms, like the things that people experience when they are experiencing their stressor, their disorder, a lot of them are very physiological. So they have to do with the body. And the subconscious is what hosts all the function, the operating functions of the physical body. And even the ones that aren't physical and just are only anxious, let's say, thoughts, where someone will have a lot of anxious thoughts. They don't necessarily have a physical response to their stressor or their disorder, but they'll have all of a sudden these very manic or panic induced or
would nightmares fall into that?
Yeah, totally. Because a lot of what your dreams are is your subconscious. It's all the stuff that's in there. That's why usually what is fresh in the brain, what you had experienced that day, can show up in your dreams, or something that you've been thinking about a lot shows up in your dreams, or you're really worried about going to that meeting with your boss next week, and every day until the meeting you have a dream about it, right? So the things that are consuming your mind, the thoughts that you are having, a lot of times show up in your dreams. And so yes, nightmares can definitely be a symptom that people experience.
Oh, that was so helpful. I was thinking when you were talking about that process of when you were talking about the process of how the little girl sees a dog and then all these things start happening, like without even her thinking about it, the body just goes into action. Would that also happen if the little girl doesn't remember the attack? So I'm thinking, like, a lot of times I experience reactions and I don't really know why I react that way. And I have spoken to a lot of guests who were saying the same thing, like if they have experienced trauma or sexual trauma when they were children and maybe don't even remember all of it, but we respond in ways where we're like, really have to unpack it. Like, why do I feel this way about this particular situation?
Absolutely. You don't necessarily have to remember the incident, because that is a coping mechanism of our mind to shut us out from the memory. The subconscious hosts the memory, but it doesn't mean the subconscious doesn't have the memory anymore just because you don't remember it. You know what I mean? So you don't necessarily remember the day that you learned 2 + 2 = 4, but you just know that information now. And maybe that's a pretty weird example to give right now, but
no,
it's
that
the
makes
first
sense.
Thing that came to my mind.
No, it made me think, oh yeah, you're right.
Right. And so people, a lot of people that experience things as children, especially sexual assault survivors, their brain does that as a coping mechanism, that it shuts out the memory so that they don't remember it anymore. So as a way to help them, let's just say, it thinks it's trying to help them. And that's something to realize too, is even though it may be very frustrating to have your symptoms, right, when you have PTSD, no matter the small or largeness of it, I guess, it's important to remember that your subconscious, your brain, your body is trying to help you. It thinks it is, at least. It's trying to help you get away from danger, right? Mm-hmm. But the thing is, it has inappropriately stored what danger is. And so, like the example of the little girl, her brain has stored all dogs as danger rather than the dog that bit her as danger. And so what her brain is trying and her body is trying to do every time she sees a dog after that dog is actually something positive. It's trying to help her. And though it is frustrating, especially when you don't want to experience her symptoms anymore, it is trying to help you. And so don't get too down on yourself, too hard on yourself, because that's definitely not going to help you with your healing process if you're beating yourself up the whole time. So always remember that it is trying to help you, although it's just misinformed as to how to help you. And that's where hypnosis comes in, because hypnosis can then allow you to speak to your subconscious and then give it a better instruction. Say, I don't need to run or have a panic attack anytime I see a dog, but thank you for trying to keep me safe. What I would rather have you do anytime I see a dog now is this, right? And that's and I'll go deeper, of course, so that it's more understandable. But hypnosis is a way to communicate to your subconscious mind. And just to backtrack a little bit to finish the thought from before, that yes, you can absolutely not remember something, but still experience PTSD from it. I personally have a PTSD that I don't remember the event, but I know I have it because I have the physical, much less than before, because I have been working on it and I've been going to my own hypnotist and everything like that. But every time that I am encountering a situation in which I would get intimate, I would have a panic attack. And I do not remember the specific incident, and I'm not sure what age it happened. I don't know when along my life it had happened or where my brain stored intimacy with danger, but it did. And I've worked very hard. At first, I was really focused on just pinpointing the memory, but it wasn't coming to me, and so I stopped trying to force it, and I just instead worked on the symptoms, and I instead worked on convincing is the wrong word communicating to my brain, to my subconscious, that intimacy is not dangerous. I am not going to get hurt when I choose to be intimate with someone. And so that's a whole thing. So yeah, you don't need to necessarily remember the event. All you need to do is be able to identify your symptoms and link them to a situation. And so I linked my symptoms of a panic attack to the situation of me getting intimate with someone. Mm-hmm. And so perhaps it's an adult that doesn't understand why they fear dogs so much. They don't remember getting bit by a dog when they were younger, right? And their parents didn't think it was necessary to bring it up. But now they're an adult and they get fearful every time they're around a dog. They start to get anxious. They sweat. They start breathing really fast. Their heart beats really fast, and they don't know why. All they need to know is the cue, the trigger, and the symptoms they experience then. Because as soon as you find out what triggers it, that kind of gives you a hint as to what the memory, the original memory or the original traumatic event was.
Let me just ask and then I'll
finish. Sure.
Can babies start accumulating these kind of traumatic triggers? I had always mm-hmm. wondered, because if you don't really understand what's happening and if something is bad or good, or do you innately know that this is not good? And yeah, that's my question there. And so then yeah. It's hopeful I'm seeing. So if you don't even, well, it's hard because you would think that sometimes people think, oh, they're really young, so they won't remember. And so that's, mm-hmm. you know, good that they don't remember. But in this case, they might have these different things manifesting when they're older, right. But at least then they can work through it even if they don't remember the event. But I would love to know that.
Mm-hmm. Yes. Your subconscious is turned on from day one.
Okay.
And so you are like a little tiny sponge, especially when you are a child, because you don't have a very developed conscious mind yet. And I'll give an example as to what I mean by that. And so if you experience, let's say, and let's step away from trauma for just a moment, but sure. If you experience your parents always fighting about money, they're yelling at each other about money, they're saying money is like evil, right? They are saying all these negative things about money. you store the information as a child that money is bad. I mean, it's obvious, right? That's an obvious truth, because I'm seeing the only two examples of an adult that I have in my life, my parents screaming, fighting, cursing out money. And so you're, as a child, you don't have the conscious mind to say, I wonder if everybody's parent does this. Because your conscious mind, sorry, is responsible for intellect. It's responsible for reasoning ability and analytical skills. And so you don't necessarily have that fully developed analytical skills and reasoning ability when you are, let's say, 5 years old. You don't sit there and contemplate the meaning of life when you're 5 years old. And so you are just like a walking, talking subconscious mind. And so everything you are experiencing when you are a child, your brain is storing as truth. And again, it's doing this because it thinks it's doing you a favor. It is doing this so that when you get older, you know how to be an adult. So basically what it's doing is modeling everything that you are witnessing and experiencing as a child so that you can then imitate that behavior when you get older and then survive as an adult, if you want to bring it back to really primitive thoughts and ways of being. And so if you see your parents fighting about money, you store the idea and the truth, because to you it is a truth, even though it's not a universal truth. To you in that moment, it is a truth. You store it in your brain as a truth. And for some reason, in your 20s and 30s, you cannot seem to get a grip on your finances.
Yeah.
And you may not even remember like that huge argument your parents had where they were throwing things saying, why are you wasting money on this? And we can't pay these bills, blah, blah, blah. You may not even remember that actual fight. But for some reason, you just can't get a grip on your finances. And you don't really even believe that you are worthy of having money. But where's it all coming from? You had to have learned that way of thinking or being at some point. And so when you from 0 to 8 to 10 years old, you are like a walking, talking subconscious mind. From 8 to 10 is where you begin to develop that reasoning ability and the analytical skills. And you begin to kind of create and formulate your own identity in the world and formulate your own ideas and likes and dislikes. But from 0 to 8 or 0 to 10 years old, you are just like a walking, talking sponge, absorbing everything around you. And so whether you remember it or not, it is going to have an effect later in your life through your actions, your thoughts, your belief systems, and your emotions.
Oh, that's a really good explanation. I'm always so worried that I screwed up my kids, and they're great. They are amazing kids. I always just hope and wonder. And my littlest one, I was curious because my littlest one as well, she has a lot of anxiety. And I remember, she struggles with her emotions. And I know I did growing up, and when I was pregnant with her, like, because my healing really started later in my life, where I was really able to understand and heal. And so I always wonder, because some of the ways she acts, I think, gosh, I used to do that as a kid, but I always thought it was because of the abuse that I experienced.
Right.
And I'm starting, with her thinking, oh, maybe it's not, maybe it's something else. And that's, maybe the abuse just exasperated it. And, but just curious about how, birth is pretty traumatic. Is there, I don't know, I'm going, sorry. And if this is not, I'm thinking, I wonder if that, just like even that whole process is traumatic for the baby and something that we need to work through. I don't know.
Right. I mean, you can't always control what they're going to adopt and what they're going to absorb. And you can't always control how they'll make sense of things. All you can really control is how you behave and speak and are in front of them. Right.
Yeah.
And so that's why it is so important for you to do your healing, because you healing yourself is healing them, whether you know it or they know it or not. Because when you heal, your actions, your thoughts, your words are going to change only for the better. And so they're going to see that. They're going to see your improved thoughts, your improved behaviors, your improved words, right? They're going to witness all of that too. And so what's even more important than what happened before is what you're going to do from here on out.
That is so good. And it's almost like by you healing and improving the way you show up in the world as a parent, you're helping to rewire those different ideas that they might have absorbed unintentionally.
Absolutely. And I always like to say, because I like to call myself a recovering people pleaser.
Oh,
I would
yes.
always... Yes, I would always, and so many of us are, but like I would always put other people's needs before my own. I would say yes to every favor, even if the person wasn't necessarily like deserving of it, you know, deserving of my niceness, let's just say, because
yeah.
they knew I would say yes. And so they would ask. And so I am a recovering people pleaser for sure. And it went to as far as like not having my radio up loud in my car because I didn't want to annoy the cars around me. Like it went really deep. Like I am a recovering people pleaser. But a lot, what I came to realize is that what I thought I was doing by people pleasing was bettering the world. I thought I was bettering the world because I was helping all these people and I was putting, their needs above my own. And so I was meeting their needs and their needs were being met and that's good. Right. And so I thought I was bettering the world by being a people pleaser. But then what did that do to me? It left me drained. It left my needs unmet. It left me exhausted. It left me, being taken for advantage of. And then how am I going to show up in the world with all of that?
Yeah.
And right. And so if I'm going to show up in the world drained, exhausted, taken advantage of with unmet needs, right, I'm only contributing, well, not only, but I'm contributing negatively, actually, right? And because one, I'm setting the example for anyone who's watching me that that's okay to do. And two, I am then not allowing the people who I've put on a pedestal to learn their own lessons. And so it's actually more beneficial for me to that cliche saying of fill my own cup first before I start filling up everybody else's. And that is why healing is not selfish. That is why taking time for yourself is not selfish. And that is why even if you are a parent, you need to take 5, 10, 15, 20 minute breaks when and wherever you can to do you, right? To heal you, to tend to your needs, even if it's just like sitting down and taking some deep breaths, right? So kudos to you for you healing and also becoming conscious that what you do and how you show up is having an impact.
Thank you so much for sharing that because I see a lot on social media and just people I talk to. There's a lot of guilt around self-care and a lot of what they call mom guilt, right? So that we need to be making sure that, of course, our partners, our spouses, our children are put first, that we are doing everything for them before us. But you're absolutely right. I can't show up in a way where I am not going to be traumatizing the heck out of them. No, I'm just joking. But like, I can't show up in a way where I am going to be reinforcing the calm, peaceful, loving environment I want to if I'm stressed and overtired and I don't feel taken care of myself.
Yeah. Yeah. Because they'll see it. They'll see it. Whether they're making sense of it or not, they're not necessarily going to say, oh, mom's putting other people before herself and therefore she's tired and cranky sometimes and maybe like just looks drained and exhausted. They're not going to like put those pieces together. All they're going to see is, oh, mom stays busy helping others and that's probably the best way to live. And so therefore I will always put others before myself too.
Oh yes, that's what it means to be a mom. And then when I respond stressed out or tired or snappy, that's the way to respond in X situation, what you know, whatever the situation is. And then they start to store those reactions and those little traumas.
Yeah.
Oh, wow. That was just so great. I've never understood it in that way before. That is so helpful. I would love to know, You had mentioned a little bit earlier in our conversation about how you were trying to remember the specific event that caused the trauma. And when I was growing up, I always thought that that was the way to go. I was interested in hypnosis because how I remember the events, I'll just use me for an example, that had happened is some of them I mainly remember the feelings, the words, and like say what I was looking at, right? I didn't really understand what was happening, but I can clearly picture the room. I can clearly picture the events in that way. And so it always really, I always thought if I could remember clearly everything, then that would help me be able to work through it and release it. Then when I started to do, as I started to do my own healing, I always wondered, will I even be able to remember exactly what happened if at that age I didn't even really understand what was happening? And then a second piece was when I started doing the podcast, you know, I learned so much from all of you, all of the guests and everything I'm reading. And there was this whole thing about re-traumatization and that I never even thought about. So I would love to hear your thoughts on if I even gave you a specific thing to give to share your thoughts on.
Right, you know, yeah, especially what you had just said, the whole re-traumatization. Yeah, for some people, again, like probably their brain knows what it's doing, right? And it blocked out that memory for a reason. And perhaps you can access bits and pieces, but for you to access the whole thing over again would just do more harm than good, right? And so through your triggers nowadays, post-traumatic, after the traumatic event, per your triggers or via your triggers, you can begin to notice or let's reword that. You can begin to identify what the initial event was about. And so again, I don't remember my initial event, but I know that my trigger was intimacy. And so I know that something wrong, and it wasn't like, I don't know how explicit I can get here, but it wasn't just like kissing and everything. That was fine.
Right.
It was when it went like into the private bedroom area.
Yeah.
That's when I would have my panic attacks. And so I know that it wasn't just like, I don't know. I don't exactly know the situation, but I do know because of what my trigger was, what my situation or what my traumatic event was about.
Yeah.
And so it had something to do with intimacy. It had something to do with that sort of connection, that vulnerability, that-ness. So because I knew what my trigger was, that's how I was able to begin my healing process. I tried to remember specific events or one event. I'm not sure if it was one or multiple, but I tried to remember the specifics and I could not. And so after a few sessions of trying to get that specific memory, I just kind of let it be. I let it be. And I said, maybe this is for the best. Maybe I'm not supposed to remember exactly what it was because it would harm me more than it would help me. But what will help me now is realizing my trigger and then working on that and my symptoms.
Okay. So would it be person by person, like some people maybe remembering the events and then working through it is helpful. And for some that's too painful. And just helping like rewire the reaction to the specific event is the best way to go. Cause I know in movies they always have like the person's in hypnosis and they're crying and it's like, then they have to pull them out because it's so traumatic. That's what you think of when you think of hypnosis, or at least me.
Right. Yeah. No, there's tons of different things people can think about with hypnosis. A lot of people think about if they don't even know that it's used for like a therapeutic thing. They just think of like the entertainment things, like the stage shows, right? So they think of the volunteers going up on stage and then looking like they're losing control and then like clucking like chickens, like you had mentioned in the beginning. So a lot of people, like, that's their only exposure to hypnosis. They don't even know that hypnosis can be used for like therapy or for just like habit change, like nail biting and everything and smoking. Yeah, I mean that can happen, and sometimes it definitely is person to person. It depends on the person, it depends on the trauma, it depends on what stage of for a lack of a better word, okayness they are currently. Like maybe down the line of their healing journey, after they heal a little bit, their subconscious will kind of let up on the memory. But for now, they need to do healing work before the memory can surface, because without a little bit of healing, it would just scar them a little even more, right? And so it definitely depends on person to person. And there is something called like a regression in hypnosis, and that's when you go back in time almost through your memories, and you seek out this specific memory for that reason. And I've done that with clients. I've had clients almost relive in their mind the event, and that in itself, when we are reliving the event, that's when we do our healing, and it already does wonders for their present day life. Others can't remember, so we don't do anything about that past memory. We just recondition and rewire their brain and their mind to in regards to what their trigger is, and rewiring how they respond to the trigger.
That is so interesting. I need this because I'm thinking, you know, when you were talking about how we identify the triggers. So now that I'm an adult and I've done lots of healing, I still have lots of healing to do. And I believe that I won't ever be fully healed, but I'll be able to understand it and work with it. And, but when I was thinking about that, I still discover things. So I noticed that recently in my life, since you're talking about intimacy, and a lot of people, thank you for sharing that, by the way, because a lot of people ask me to talk about intimacy. I think it's because it's one of the hardest things to talk about. You know, it's just so personal. So I appreciate you sharing that. And what I had noticed is, so for example, if I was going to be with my husband, if we were going to be intimate together, I do to this day, I shut down and I have to talk to myself in my head and tell myself it's safe, it's fine, it's okay. So I really wanted to get, because I know that it's safe. I have a beautiful relationship with my husband. He is such an amazing man. Every single time I will get all tense, and I kind of realized as if at any point I tell myself that it's something I have to do. It's not that I have to do it, but it's like if any thought goes into my head, like, oh, I should, or if I'm tired and maybe I know that he wants to be intimate, and if I say it all in my head that I should, all of a sudden, it's almost like maybe I don't have the power, or that it's an obligation, which brings me back to when I really didn't have a say when I was a kid. And so I've kind of, I think I've dove into that and kind of opened this up. And my husband has no idea all of this is going on in my head. But that doesn't like change it. You know what I mean? So it would that be what something like hypnosis would help with?
Absolutely. And I can speak not only from helping actual others with this, but myself, because that was the same for me. Because I would con see, the thing is, your subconscious and your conscious are two different things. And again, your conscious is intellectual, and your subconscious is purely like, it's still an 8-year-old, right? It doesn't have that logic. It doesn't have analytical skills or reasoning ability. All it knows is what it knows. But your conscious mind can say things like, if we go back to that example of the girl getting bit by the dog, and then after time, every time she sees the dog after, she has that sort of panic attack afterwards. The mom, let's say her mom, who's next door or something, can lean over and say, it's not the same dog. It's okay. It doesn't matter. It doesn't matter, because her logic is shut off. There is no consciousness there. And so you can have the conscious thought of everything's okay. This is my husband. He loves me. I love him. It's okay to be intimate with him. I enjoy being intimate with him. I want it to be intimate with him. But your subconscious doesn't hear that. Your subconscious only knows what it knows. It doesn't know logic. It doesn't know intellect, and all of those things that you had come to the conclusion of in the moment, those things that you consciously know to be true, are not true to your subconscious. What's true to your subconscious is your trauma. What's true to your subconscious is linking intimacy with what had happened in your past. And so your conscious mind, thank goodness we have one. That's how we've evolved as a species to the extent that we have. But it has really no place when it comes to post-traumatic stress disorder. And so, yes, absolutely. Hypnosis can help with that, because hypnosis is, I like to refer to it as a bridge from the conscious to the subconscious. And I'll use an example that doesn't have to do with PTSD, just to kind of simplify it a little bit further. Like, let's say I see someone for smoking. They want to stop smoking, right? They could have the conscious thought, I want to quit smoking. I should quit smoking. Smoking is bad for me. They could think that all day long, but yet they're still smoking cigarettes.
Yes.
You know, it's because their subconscious has linked, smoking cigarettes with, relaxation or whatever they, or stress release or whatever they smoke, for whatever their reason for smoking is. Their subconscious has linked that, habit with what it needs to do in order to relieve stress. And so it doesn't care about your logic. It doesn't care about your intellect and all of your great reasons to stop smoking, like all the health benefits and the money saving and all that. It doesn't matter, because your subconscious needs that stress relief, and that's what it knows. And so when you have this bridge of communication to communicate your conscious thoughts and conscious desires to your subconscious, that is hypnosis. And not everybody uses that metaphor, but I like to use the metaphor of the bridge, where it bridges, it creates a bridge of communication from your conscious mind to your subconscious. And what happens during hypnosis, the reason why hypnosis is so powerful, is because while you are in hypnosis, that conscious analytical reasoning ability, that aspect of your mind, I don't want to say it's shut off, because that's not the right terminology, but it is, let's say, sleeping. I don't know. Yeah. And I'll go into an example to better explain what I cannot put into words for some reason right now.
You're doing great.
Thanks. And so let's say someone comes to me for smoking. Let's just use the same example. And before we go into hypnosis, before we do all that, I could just sit there and say to them, you think cigarettes are disgusting. You'll never want to smoke another cigarette in your life. And their conscious mind, the intellect and the reasoning ability, is going to be like, that makes no sense. I like cigarettes. You're right.
Yeah.
And so it's kind of, it acts as like a refusal to my suggestion, to my statement, versus when you are in hypnosis, which I will explain exactly what hypnosis is in just a moment. Awesome. When you are in hypnosis, that refusal, that gateway to your subconscious is kind of lifted. And so when I say all those same phrases while in hypnosis, it gets adopted by the subconscious as truth. Just like when you were a kid, everything you experienced was stored as a truth. Because when you were a child, again, that conscious mind was not fully developed. And so you are like a walking, talking subconscious, absorbing everything. And so when you are in hypnosis, which is nothing but a state of mind, just like being relaxed is a state of mind and being happy is another state of mind, right? Hypnosis is nothing but another state of mind. When you are in that state, it is very much like you are in the same state as you were when you were a child and you didn't have that consciousness to refuse and refute all the things that were being thrown at you. And so hypnosis in itself is a state of being, right? So when you, let's say, for example, meditate, when you first begin meditating, before you close your eyes and start, you are fully alert. right? Your brainwave activity is at its peak, at its highest, because you are still looking around. You haven't even started meditation yet. But as soon as you close your eyes and take that first deep breath, your brainwave activity already begins to slow down. And so I'll give you the two ends of the spectrum. So the fully alert and awake state, and then sleeping. And every level of relaxation, every level of consciousness in between those two states is a different level of relaxation. Okay. And so again, before you start your meditation, you're fully alert, your brain activity is at its peak. And then you close your eyes and take one deep breath, and you're already lowering your brain activity, your brainwave activity. You're already entering the first level of relaxation, let's just say. And then you keep deep breathing and you keep on with your meditation. And as you keep on, you can go deeper and deeper into relaxation. The levels of relaxation also correlate with the levels of meditation. And they also correlate with the levels of hypnosis. And why is this powerful? Because when you lower your brain wave activity, you are lifting the veil to your subconscious. You are turning off that conscious aspect of your mind, because when you are relaxed, you don't need to ponder like the difference between things. You don't need to ponder the reasoning of life when you are in a relaxed state. You don't need your intellect. And so that's when your intellect rests, let's just say. And so when you lower your brainwave activity, you are becoming more and more relaxed. And the deepest you can go is right before you go to sleep. And any level of relaxation between being fully awake and being asleep is a level of relaxation, which is also a level of hypnosis. And you don't necessarily need to go to the deepest level right before falling asleep to make change. It's just as soon as you begin to relax is when you begin to enter a hypnotic state. And that is when the hypnotist begins to use the suggestions, the constructed language, the constructed terms and phrases to communicate to your subconscious mind what you want it to do instead. And a lot of people don't understand that you're not like lacking control of yourself while you are in hypnosis because of all the misconceptions of hypnosis. But it is absolutely nothing. It's furthest from the truth, because if I were to see a client and then I tell them when they came to me for like quitting smoking or confidence, I'm not going to tell them in hypnosis, and you're never going to eat cheese another day in your life, because that's not what they are coming to hear. And so that's not what their mind is going to adopt. And so your mind's only going to adopt what you are willing and wanting it to adopt. And so people have the question after that, well, then why can people go on stage during like a stage show and quack like a duck? Like, they didn't go on stage wanting to quack like a duck. Yes. Or no, but they wanted to be part of the show. And so they opened their mind to whatever would happen.
Oh, gotcha. Okay. Oh, that's really, because I have it written down here, suggestions, because I know my mom, I was talking about going to a psychologist when I was a teenager. I'm not a psychologist, sorry, a hypnotist when I was a teenager, and she was adamantly against it. She said, no, you're going to go there and they're going to plant things and memories into your head that didn't really happen. And I was like, well, geez, why would they even want to do that? But there was enough fear there. That I
of course.
So would that be okay? So first of all, that would be a horrible hypnotist that would even want to do that. When you are under hypnosis, or do you or is there different levels? Are you aware of what's happening? So like, if somebody was to start saying, yeah, I want you clucking like a chicken, all of a sudden you would be like, whoa, whoa, whoa. Or are you not aware while it's happening? And which leads into my second question, depending on how you answer that, is do you remember after, or are you just, do you just feel better?
So sometimes it depends how deep the person goes. So if the person like is at one of the higher forms of relaxation rather than one of the deeper forms of relaxation, if someone is more of the higher form, they'll probably hear every single word that I say and they'll probably remember the whole experience. But it's okay. That doesn't matter if you remember it or not. All that matters is that you are in some sort of relaxed state in which your conscious mind isn't there like refusing every suggestion that I'm giving,
Yeah, like
right? And so
a child remembers their day, but they're absorbing. Okay, gotcha.
Right. And so, but when you are way deep, and some people get way deep into relaxation, it's like right above sleep. And so they're kind of like hazy. And it's not necessarily that they're not hearing what I'm saying, they're just so deeply relaxed, like they're doing their own thing in their head, you know?
I
And so,
totally know what you're talking about because I
right.
can go very deep into meditation. And sometimes when someone's doing a guided meditation for me, I start to go off in a different direction on a different path, but I can hear them, but I'm focused on different things. Kind of like that. Okay.
Exactly. And so it all depends on how deep the person goes. But it isn't like a rule of thumb about hypnosis that you don't remember or that you don't hear me. And me personally, I'm not saying that all hypnotists do this, but me personally, I record every session. And so the person gets the recording of their session. So even if they want to hear everything I say, but then come out of the session and is like, oh, I don't remember the middle part. Don't worry, here's your recording. You can go home and listen to it again with your headphones if you'd like. But yes, it's not like a rule of thumb that you're not going to hear what the hypnotist says or that you'll be in some sort of like dream state or something. It just depends on how deep into relaxation that you go.
If you listen to that recording and them being guided, you, so myself, like if I listen to the recording and I'm listening to that, am I going to go under hypnosis again, listening to you do the whole thing, or it doesn't work that
Oh
way? Oh yeah, okay.
Absolutely. Because it's very much just like a guided meditation, kind of how you were saying that if you are using a guided meditation and you go very deep into your relaxation, you're kind of in this hazy state where your mind's doing its thing, but you're also like hearing the guided meditation, but you have absolutely, well, you didn't say this part, but you have like absolutely no awareness of your surroundings. Like
Oh yeah.
you're not thinking about like what room you're in and like what color the couch is that you're sitting on while you're doing your meditation. All you are focused on is what's in your head and what's going on
Yes.
in your mind. And so as long as someone utilizes the recording correctly, they will go right back into the hypnosis that they experienced while they are in the session. And what I mean by utilizing it correctly is you're not walk on a walk listening to it. You know, you're sitting down comfortably or lying down comfortably, just like you would be in the session. You'll go just as deep. And that's something I do. I make recordings for people who either aren't in my area or like during this whole COVID situation, a lot of my clients have transitioned to just getting recordings from me because they are uncomfortable with the whole in-person thing, which is totally understandable. But that is how it is. Well, not that's not how, but yes, recordings are very much successful and just as effective as an in-person session would be.
That makes a lot of sense because it would be your intention. Like when I'm sitting down, I'm intending to meditate. I'm intending to go deep into meditation. I've made the space and I've prepared myself for that. That makes a lot of sense. So hypnosis, you would be changing the way. So for example, with intimacy or smoking, so you're helping to put different thoughts and relation, not thoughts, but relationships. I don't want to say anything that makes different relationships to the triggers. So for example, with the intimacy sort of situation, like with me and my husband, so it is safe, those different things you were saying. By saying it is safe, you want to be intimate, there is no problem, whatever the case may be. I'm absorbing that, and it's helping to replace what has been established long ago.
Right. And there's different avenues we could take, especially when it comes to something like a post-traumatic stress disorder. Whereas with smoking, what I usually pretty much do the same thing with almost every client. I mean, of course, it depends on why they smoke. Like some people smoke for stress release, some people smoke just out of pure habit. They've been doing it for 50 years. And so it all depends. Like sometimes I'll link cigarette in their mind, I'll suggest to their subconscious that cigarettes are disgusting and they make them gag, right? And so now every time they see a cigarette, like they just have, they want nothing to do with it. Versus, and so like I'm, like you said, I'm kind of, and now I'm not even remembering the words you said, but yes, I am the relationship to what they are experiencing has been changed within their subconscious mind. And so with intimacy, it would, you can go in different avenues. So you can work on specifically, like when you become intimate with your husband, like you and a hypnotist can work specifically on that kind of event, or you and the hypnotist can work on something else, like vulnerability, feeling safe to be vulnerable, right? Or you and the hypnotist can work back on kind of untying the emotional tie that your traumatic event has. And so you can work more if you personally had remembered your situation or situations that were traumatic, you can work on taking away the emotional charge to those things. So there are different avenues you can go down.
Oh, that makes sense. So we could go all the way back to the, because I do remember all the way back to in, you know, in this example of anyone who relates to this, to that specific event and untangle all of the emotions that were kind of connected or all of the wiring that was set up during that event, and that would heal, that could heal where I'm at now with the triggers. Wow. That is so helpful. I was it even helped me understand meditation, and I hope it helped the audience too. It helped me understand all of that even better because yeah, they say, "Oh, meditation, it's good to quiet your mind." Okay, yeah, I get it because we're busy, 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 so it's good to quiet your mind. But the way you explain hypnosis and the stages of sleep and meditation, it even makes meditation, the value of it, so much more clear.
And like there's a, and honestly, like mantra meditation specifically is pretty much hypnosis. Because you're going into that very deep and profound and relaxed state of mind, and then you're repeating positive mantras to yourself. What is that doing? That's wiring your brain. Because you are saying those mantras to yourself while your subconscious is susceptible to suggestion. You are saying those mantras or those affirmations to yourself, or the guided meditation is saying them to you while you are in that relaxed state of mind. And so mantra meditation, in a sense, is hypnosis.
There's gonna there may be very avid experienced meditation practitioners who are going to hate me for saying this, but I was thinking, you know, that there's like the pinnacle of meditation is typically focusing on the breath, right? And that's you have no thoughts, you're free of thoughts, and you're focusing on the breath. And it's hard for a lot of people. I personally, I love guided meditations. And after talking with you, I would think that just as powerful or even more powerful would be to have what you were just mentioning, mantra meditation, where you go into a deep meditation, and then you are having those affirmations or those positive, those positive affirmations and mantras being repeated while you're in that meditation versus just silence.
It's powerful stuff. And a lot of people, there are some philosophies that'll suggest like meditation isn't even for everyone because they have so much stored up within their body that the moment they quiet their mind, it flushes to the surface. And so it's good, especially for those types of people who aren't either very familiar with meditation or that have a lot of things stored within their physical or subtle body. It is very, like, it would be very beneficial to listen to a guided meditation versus trying to just silence everything.
Yes, because you can focus on that person and what they're telling you. And yeah, yeah. and sometimes when you start to do it a lot, like I had just mentioned, I will be guided, but then all of this, I will go off into my own thing while the person is talking. But in that beginning, it is so helpful to listen and kind of just do with your mind what the person's telling you to do. And it feels really good.
Yeah, right.
That is amazing. Okay, so you obviously are an amazing human being, and and so if people are looking for, they're interested in hypnosis, you would be a great person to go to. And also, if there were people out there that were like wanted to research or look for other hypnotists, what would be some key things that they would need to make sure they're asking or looking for when wanting to work with the hypnotist?
Excellent, excellent question. So there is different, there's about three different national certifications that you can get. And I'm not exactly familiar with the names of the other two because I'm only certified by one of them. But ask where they got certified. Okay. Ask where they got certified, and then ask, of course, what they like to do most. Because some hypnotists only focus on like smoking, right? Some hypnotists niche down that far. And so if you're going to a hypnotist that specializes in stopping people from smoking, but you're going for PTSD, perhaps you want to get someone that's a little more familiar with trauma, right? And mm-hmm. so ask the hypnotist what they mainly work with, right? And then also ask where or how they are certified, where they are certified.
Okay, that is awesome. Thank you so much. And so though, how about if people wanted to work with you? So I was on your beautiful website and I was looking and I saw you have a lot of different programs. I saw you have one of the hardest ones for me when anybody ever brings this up, there's an immediate, so I know I have work to do there is inner child work. And immediately when people bring that up, that's like a huge, heavy, it just feels huge and heavy in my chest. And I'm sorry, you have a lot of different programs, that being one of them. So I would love for you to share like, what are the different things that you offer? I saw you have like a YouTube channel too, don't you?
Yes, I have a YouTube channel to kind of break all of this stuff down, because the biggest thing that stops people from doing this self-development or this healing work and then being able to prosper in their life is just a lack of knowledge. Mm-hmm. It's just a lack of knowledge of how the brain works, how society has kind of just made you believe certain things and be a certain way. And so my YouTube channel, I can't even say exactly what I talk about on there, because I talk about a lot of different things, but it all has to do with healing and prospering. I have my YouTube channel, which is just basically a free resource for information and tools and tips and healing tools and all that jazz. But as far as my programs, I do have multiple programs. So I, of course, integrate hypnosis into every program I have. So I do one-on-one coaching with people. So when someone has multiple areas of their life they want to improve and they are looking for just accountability, they're looking for someone who may be a few steps ahead of them to help guide them and give them a framework and how to do it and how to get to where they want to go, I am available for one-on-one coaching. And then I also am just available for pure hypnosis sessions, whether they be in person or virtual. And what I mean by virtual is we have a conversation over the phone first, and then I make a recording in my studio, and then I send it to you through email. So I do custom hypnosis recordings, I do sessions in person, I have that one-on-one coaching, and then yes, inner child connection is its own separate thing, although of course I tie hypnosis in there a little bit because that's my thing. But yes, inner child work is very profound. That is very profound, and I can't name one situation in which tears were not involved. So that's some deep stuff. And so that definitely is all about healing, anywhere from healing being an over people pleaser to healing trauma. Inner child work can help a lot.
Wow, that is awesome. And where can people find you? Your website, your social media, you mentioned YouTube.
So yeah, on Instagram and on YouTube, I'm just my name, Stephanie Jarmuth, which is Jarmuth. And my website is reroot, reroot, reroothypnosis.com.
That's wonderful. And I'll have for sure have all of those in the show notes so people can, and on my social media so people can click and access you very easily. I absolutely loved all of this. You have such a wonderful way of explaining it so simply, but not so, but also very meaningfully. If that makes sense. So it's not just so surface level that I'm like, okay, just like I mentioned, meditation, it's good to quiet your mind. Okay. And that helped to really just understand a lot about myself, and I guarantee the audience will feel the same. I wanted to ask, is there anything you want to leave, any parting words that you would like to leave with the audience?
I would love to just encourage people to heal and prosper. And again, not to be shamed to think that their trauma isn't big enough, right? And so anything from getting lost to going to war, right? Heal, heal so that you can prosper. Everybody deserves healing, and you can't afford not to, honestly. You can't afford not to heal if you want to have a joyful, a free and abundant type of life, and additionally, a healthy one, because stressors and traumatic disorders have a long-term negative effect on the body and the nervous system. That example of me, or that example of the girl getting bit by the dog, and all the things that simultaneously happen as soon as she sees a dog in the future, the blood rushing to the muscles and the logic being turned off and the sympathetic nervous system being turned on, which is the opposite of relaxation, those all have long-term negative effects on the body, the nervous system, the mindset, the emotions. You can't afford not to heal. And so I encourage you, whether it just be to watch YouTube channels and find out how to heal on your own or to go to someone to get facilitation. I think that's the right word. To heal so that you could prosper.
I absolutely love that. Stephanie, thank you so much for all
Thank
the
you.
knowledge and love and compassion that you shared on the show with me and the audience. I truly appreciate you showing up, and I am so glad that our paths crossed. So thank you so very much.
Me too. I'm so glad our paths crossed as well. And I'm so glad that you have this place that knowledge can be spread. But not just from me, but from all of your other guests as well. So thank you.
Thank you so much, and I hope you have a beautiful evening.
You too.